Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Welcome to episode 44 of Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack, and I thank you as always for joining me. Okay, so a few years ago, I received a galley for the book, The Widows. The premise sounded pretty interesting. A woman who has to take over the sheriff duties of her husband who has been killed. And I'll let today's guest, Jess Montgomery, give you a far better description of the book. But at the time, I thought, wow, okay. So this is turn of the century American historical fiction. Check. Strong women protagonists. Check. Turn of the century American historical fiction wrapped around a mystery that takes place in the Midwest. Check. The Widows, by today's guest, Jess Montgomery, was on the Goodreads list for the most anticipated thrillers of 2019. And author Wiley Cash says, Jess Montgomery's gorgeous writing can be just as dark and terrifying as a subterranean cave when the candle is snuffed out. But her prose can just as easily lead you to the surface for a gasp of air and a glimpse of blinding, beautiful sunlight. This is a powerful novel. Well, with that from Wiley Cash, I am thrilled, delighted, and just so happy to welcome author Jess Montgomery to episode 44 of Top Shelf at Merrick Library. Jess Montgomery, I don't even know what to say after all that. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm just going to give the listeners and readers a little bit of background about you. Jess Montgomery is the literary life columnist for the Dayton Daily News and former executive director of the renowned Antioch Writers Workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Based on early chapters of The Widows, Jess was awarded an Ohio Arts Council Individual Artists Grant for Literary Arts and the John E. Nance Writer in Residence at Thurber House in Columbus, Ohio. She still lives in Ohio where she was born and raised. And I honestly, she's so busy. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to join me today. Jess, I'm going to let you tell everybody about The Widows, this incredible book.
Oh, thank you. I found the idea, or maybe the idea found me, when I discovered the true first female sheriff in Ohio, a woman named Maud Collins. She became sheriff of Vinton County in 1925 when her husband Fletcher really was killed in the line of duty. But there was no mystery about how he died. He was serving a warrant for speeding to some guy, and this guy didn't want to be picked up, so he shot the sheriff and killed him. Plenty of witnesses, so no mystery whatsoever. And Maud and Fletcher had 5 kids, and they lived in the sheriff's house. The county owned the sheriff's house, the jail behind the house, and Maud was the jail matron. But she just assumed, well, her husband's dead, and they're not going to keep her on, and where's she going to live? So she's packing up her kids to go back home to West Virginia when, as the story goes, one of the county commissioners showed up and said, "Where are you going, Maud? We want you to be sheriff." So in real life, that's what happened. And she stayed. She ran for sheriff again in her own right in 1926, won by a landslide, and had a lifelong career until retirement in law enforcement. And I honestly would never have thought, okay, I'm going to write a mystery novel featuring a female sheriff in 1925 Appalachian, Ohio. That just does not, that would not occur to me, because there aren't that many female sheriffs now. The next female sheriff, by the way, was in 1976 in Ohio, which is one reason it would have never have occurred to me, right? But once I saw that this had actually happened, I was fascinated by the notion of a woman in that role back then in rural Ohio. And of course, my mystery writer's mind said, yeah, but what if she didn't know who killed her husband? And from there, Lily Ross, the protagonist of my series, came into being. So she is inspired by Maud. She is not Maud, but she's definitely inspired by Maud. And yeah, that's where the idea came from.
And I have to apologize to readers right off the bat and to listeners. When I read The Galley, I had no idea this is going to be part of a series that would now become a part of my life. So
you want to hear something really funny? When I finished the book and it was blessedly picked up by Minotaur Books, I had a 2-book deal. One was for the widows. One was for an historical mystery set in mid-century-ish America. So it wasn't contracted as a series. And I did not write this thinking it was a series at all. I thought I'd created this complete story. And so then in chatting with my amazing and wonderful editor at Minotaur, I had these ideas for other characters, other stories. And she said, you know, those sound great, but have you thought about writing a series? And I said, no, I really haven't. And she said, I can't stop thinking about these characters. And so that's how, and so I said, let me just play with it. I was honestly a little reluctant. So I came up with an idea for like 10 years later in the 30s. I thought, oh, we'll take on the Great Depression. That'll be interesting. And my editor pointed out, that's a lot of backstory to have to fill in. Why don't you consider... And part of the reason was I didn't want Lily to solve the mystery of who killed her husband in The Widows and then become 2 months later or a week later, have a mystery to solve. It just didn't feel right. So what we agreed was that the books would space every year, year and a half in terms of time passing, you know, give or take a few months, depending on what I want to do. So that's how the series was born. And it was interesting to talk with her and realize I didn't understand my own material in some ways, that I really had created this world and that kinship means kin and community. And it's not just an interesting name for a town. That's what it means. And Lily's at the heart of this community. But each book has a narrator. She shares the narration with one other person from the community. So the idea is, you know, she has her own individual grit to solve crimes, but she needs the community to help her just as much as they need her to help them.
Yeah, I think we all need Team Lily t-shirts is what I think we all need to get.
Yes, I like that.
What was amazing to me is that after I finished The Widows, and just to sort of refresh my memory, I thought, all right, I'm going to try to listen to this. And I have a very difficult time listening to audiobooks to begin with. So apologies to all my audiobook listeners. But during these times, I spend a lot of time walking and just sort of getting out of the house and masking up and doing all of that. But it eats into my reading time. And I thought, all right, I'm going to try to listen to The Widows as an audiobook. And the incredible Susan Bennett is the narrator. It became such a visual listen. I didn't bump into any oak trees and I didn't walk into a mailbox. You know, I kept my pace steady. But at the end, I thought, well, wait, I actually thought, which is something that you just said, I was not finished with Lily or Marvina or George or Abe. I thought, well, that door is open a crack. I wonder. And then as I went to return the audiobook, I got a little flag. Would you like to read the next book in the series? And then I almost walked into the oak tree.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't.
Me too. I wouldn't have known who I was. Then I just immediately started reading the next book, which is The Hollows. So anyone who wants to listen to them, you've got my vote for that. And please read the second book. And then I've come to find out that there is actually a third book coming in the spring, which we'll talk about that in a little bit. Who assigns you your narrator for an audiobook?
So the producer at Macmillan Audio sent me several audition tapes. And they were all really good. I mean, they were all wonderful. But yes, Susan's voice, just in the little audition tape, just captivated me. So I selected her. And I've heard only positive things about her as a narrator. I will honestly say I've never listened to the narration of the entire book because it wouldn't be about her. It'd be me. I'd be picking apart my words and going, why did I use that word? I could have used another word. So yeah, I don't want to second guess myself about something that's already done, but I've heard only wonderful things about her. And the audition tape was so good that when The Hollows came around, they said, do you want her or do you want another narrator? And I said, as long as she's willing and as long as we have these books, let's have her do it because that makes sense continuity wise and to hear that same voice. So I've been thrilled.
Yeah. And that helped me listening to her voice resume or where the book sort of lifts off another, I'm going to say it's maybe 18 months later, approximately in that time.
Yeah.
The historical fiction that you share with the readers, this is American history. You've got Appalachian Mountains, Ohio, it takes place in Kinship, which I'm assuming is a fictitious place.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Tell the listeners about Ohio at this time. I didn't realize all of the information that you give us about the coal miners. And that's the beauty of what you do. You sort of insinuate history in a way that is so natural to the story. You put me right firmly in Ohio in the 1920s. It's really amazing what's going on in that time period.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely thank you, because that's my goal, is to, I don't want to pause the story and give a history lecture. So I learn a lot more history than I share. There's so much that ends up left on the cutting room floor. And it is fascinating to think about, and it may be true of many, many places, I'm sure it is, but how the bigger sweeps of history and political movement that's happening around them is also reaching down into their individual lives. And so that's what I kind of want to bring out through their stories and just how it affects everyday people. And I've been surprised by some of the history that I have found. And in terms of Ohio, at one time we were called the crossroads of America. So that, and in some ways that's really true. And Ohio is kind of, you know, Columbus pins it down in the middle, and then the four quadrants are each their own flavor. And southeastern Ohio is very much Appalachia. And set in that time period, there were about 80 coal mining towns dotted throughout this sort of micro region, if you will. And some of the themes that they were struggling with then, people are still struggling with now. And I really wanted to honor what I wrote about, especially the coal miners, because I grew up in a family where my family were always tobacco farmers, and then they came north and they worked in factories and gone on to do other things. So I'm very well acquainted with working class life, even though I have not personally worked in a tobacco farm or a coal mine or a factory, but I've grown up with that, and I wanted to honor that.
And I think from my perspective, it's complete, and obviously from everybody else who's reading it, because all of the reviews that I see are sort of the same, you know, you won't believe this piece of history. Mm-hmm. The way you draw the coal miners and the way they're living, and people who are living in the towns versus the ones in the 10 cities, and the scripts that they have, that's how they get paid, and the unionization or the attempt at unionization, and the different uprisings across the state and across other states. We don't learn about that in school.
Right. And yes, we do not. And I firmly believe, and this is true in the Hollows and it's true in the Stills, that as we look back at our history, yeah, let's celebrate the great stuff. But you don't get to celebrate the great stuff and ignore the really not great, nasty stuff. You have to embrace the whole of history as best you can. And even if it's uncomfortable, maybe especially if it's uncomfortable. And so that's what I've tried to do. And yeah, there's a place in The Widows where Marvina, Lily's counterpart in the first book, is sort of speechifying in her cave meeting area. And she's citing all these things that are happening or have recently happened. And they're every single one of them true. They're absolutely true. And I more than triple and quadruple checked to verify what she was talking about. It would have come naturally to her because she's immersed as an organizer in the coal mines. But I really wanted to bring those facts forward. Many of them were shocking to me.
Very shocking. And what I think is important is the way you've got Marvina as this active spokesperson driving this energy behind unionization and behind speaking out. And she's a woman. And I think that, of course, that relates to me on so many different levels. And I loved her. I thought she was great.
She is great. I loved her too.
She's a great character. We're going to hold on to her. The time period that you set this, it's very interesting. You talked about the cutting room floor. A podcast or two ago, I interviewed Kathleen Rooney for her World War I book, which actually takes place in the same forest, right? Argonne Forest. Is that how you say it?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's a battalion of mostly New Yorkers or that tri-state area that go over and fight. And yet one of the things readers will love is if they, and you probably, most of you already have, follow Jess on her website, you get these this nice little surprising supplementary material of letters. We'll talk about Daniel in a few minutes, but Daniel writing these letters to Lily. And it takes place where they're writing from is near Verdun. So, and I said to her, you know, you did such a deep dive to get all of this information. And I thought the same exact thing that you did. And I said to Kathleen Rooney, what did you leave on the cutting room floor? Those were my exact words. And then you are saying, you have no idea what I left on the cutting room floor.
A lot. Yeah. Well, there's just so much rich history. And the Argonne Forest, so in the area of Ohio I'm in, it's a part of it kind of been consumed by a local park, but there was an amusement park at one time. And I'm sort of playing with how I'll use this in a fourth book, perhaps, that's called the Argonne Forest Park. And it was an amusement park of the like 20s and 30s that we wouldn't think of it as an amusement park. There's a fishing pond, there's a dance floor. So it's very, there are no roller coasters. But this gentleman built it in honor of his best buddy who died next to him in that battle. Because there was a big group that came from the Cincinnati southern part of Ohio that went as well. So it's interesting. You know, you start diving into history and you come across the same things. I left a character on the cutting room floor for the stills. And I have a wonderful historical character that I'm excited for people to know about that I thought I had written like pages and pages and pages about her. And then when I went through the copy edits for the stills, I realized, oh, she gets to be on the stage for like 3 pages, maybe.
Because you have all the background knowledge in your mind, right?
Yeah. In my head, I could give like a lecture on this particular person from real life. But, and then George, you mentioned good old George. I love George.
Love George and Abe Miller. And as much as I never wanted them to show up in the first book, I wanted to know what they were going to do next. I pictured them in my mind, who would play them in the movie, especially Abe Miller, because man, you talk about malevolence in a character and you don't write a whole lot of sentences about him, but what you write and what is narrated to me through my earbuds was, whoa, there he is again. He's standing on the porch.
Yeah. He's scary.
Yes, he is. And in fact, because I'm listening to audio for the first time and a complete newbie, there would be times where I'd be listening and I would say something like, whoa. And my husband's like, who are you talking to? And now I got to go back and listen to the sentence that I just mentioned. Right. Like, no, you don't understand. Abe Miller just showed up.
Yeah. Good old Abe.
He just showed up. So that's why I, like I said, I'm 3/4 of the way through The Hollows, and you make this whole thing happen around a murder mystery. There's a mystery to solve. I still don't know who done it in book two.
Good.
For the series, did you have it in mind to make each book a mystery? I mean, it makes the most sense, of course, now that I'm reading them and I understand them. But was that something that you thought, well, I guess I can make the second one a mystery?
Yeah, they each need to be a mystery. Right. But it's interesting to weave together the fact, like you say, that, you know, there's a traditional whodunit embedded in there. But there's also, I try to bring in a lot of social justice issues from the day. And, you know, they resonate with today as well. Some things just keep on resonating. Mm. But also, you know, the growth of the characters. Like Lily goes through a big change in book one and kind of dealing with that in book two. And so each book will have to look at how is she changing and evolving as a person? And how does that intersect with whoever the other narrator is and what the theme of the book is? And so that it all comes together eventually.
I'm going to send your editor a thank you note for making you continue the series for the rest of us.
She'll be thrilled to get that note.
Like, yay, good job. So the female protagonists, Lily, Marvina, I love the dual perspective. I think readers love that dual perspective. Tell me about writing them. They are such significant voices. And then when you're listening, even the narrator makes it quite clear who's narrating each chapter. You don't forget. Susan Bennett really, and I guess that's her job, right? But like I said, I'm new to the audiobook world. So to me, I'm just like, wow, look at her go.
Yeah, she's a voice actress for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those two women, they leap off the page for me. How was it writing them for you?
I spent a lot of time with Lily at first, and it took a while for her to come to life for me. I tried her in first person. I tried her in third person past tense, which is the standard way of writing a story. And she just fell flat because in first person, she was a little too hysterical, which is what I would be if that had happened to my husband.
Yes.
And in third person past tense, she was far too distant. So it sounds maybe trivial, but once I had settled on third person present tense, I could put myself in her and it came to life. She came to life. Now, Marvina, Marvina showed up as a memory of Daniel's. I'll be honest here and say I actually wrote 80 pages from Daniel's point of view, which makes no sense if you read the book. Thank goodness I had the sense to cut it, but it helped me. I really got to know him. And I think that's why he comes to life on the page, even though he passes away at the very beginning. It's not a spoiler. He passes away like sentence one after the prologue. And Marvina just kind of showed up as part of one of his memories. And then she just wouldn't go away. And then she just became bigger and bigger and more real. And I thought, okay, fine. And then it hit me one day. She knows Daniel from a point of view that Lily doesn't. And she sees the world in a way that Lily doesn't. And yet they could come together and connect. And actually, one day at dinner, my husband said to me, "You're looking so sad. Is everything okay?" I'm almost probably shouldn't share this conversation. You and your listeners will be worried for me. But I said, everything's fine, except I'm really worried about Marvina. And he said, she's going through so much. She's got such a tough life. You know, I just can't believe it. And he looked at me and he goes, "You do know you made her up, right?" I said, "Yes, I'm aware. I did. Yes, yes. I haven't lost my marbles. I'm aware I made her up." And he said, "Well, you can make things easier for her since you made her up." And I said, "Where is the fun in that? Oh, no, no. I'm going to keep it really rough for poor Marvina." And that's when I knew Marvina had become three-dimensional and real in my imagination.
And listen, Marvina was not going to go down and wind up on your cutting room floor.
Nope.
And that's just what I got from book one. Okay. Yeah. So here I am 3/4 through book two. That lady is going nowhere. And I'm right. Thrilled for that. But I feel the same way that you do about her. But she's also going through this change. She's going through a metamorphosis and her sort of self-actualization. And I think it's great watching her grow and develop over the two books, which if it's even possible that I'm enjoying book two more than book one, I just think it's because I'm better informed about the people on the page in front of me, or in my ears, I should say.
The people, in your ears. That's nice.
So I love the slow reveal of all of these characters and reveals that I never saw coming. And of course, you've got Daniel. And even though Daniel is not there, you bring him in and he is just as much a character as the people who are actually narrating each chapter.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And I think it's from those 80 pages and thinking, because he's real to me. And then just thinking about people when they pass away from our lives, they're still real to us. So he would still be very much alive in their hearts and minds. And he is and will always be real to them. So looking at it that way, I was able to think about, well, what would they say about him? How would memories of him affect their thoughts, their actions? And so I was able to bring him to life in that way.
And there are these moments of Lily remembering Daniel and then pausing and just saying, oh, and I, you know, when you lose someone you love, even though they're not there to pick up the phone and speak to, or to walk down the road and go to the house and talk with them, they are still there. And there's that gaping emptiness that they're not. It's just, it's a very tough thing. And so for both Lily and Marvina, each experiencing their own losses in different ways, it's just beautifully done, beautifully, beautifully, beautifully done. The other characters, when you had to come up with George and Abe, I am going back to them because I kind of have to, because I love to read horror and I love to read suspense and I love to read, you know, the bad guy. Did you have a person in mind when you were writing them?
In terms of if, like, they play them in a film or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Curious.
Oh, no, I don't. I'm really bad at the notion of casting. I mean, I'd love to see this happen as a well-done television series. That would be neat.
I kept thinking of Michael Shannon as Abe Miller. I don't know why. I don't know if you know who Michael Shannon is, but he's such a wonderful actor, but he also can bring malevolence to the screen like nobody else. So I thought of him.
There are pros for that, I'm sure.
Yeah. This book is a page turner. it just reached up and crept up on me. I never expected it. I never saw it coming. And like I said, normally I will take a break and either do a palate cleanser and read, say, if I'm reading one type of genre, I'll sort of switch and I'll go to science fiction, or I'll go to horror, or I'll go to contemporary. Or but I did not even stop. I didn't pass go. I didn't collect my $200. I went right to the Hollows.
Aww.
So,
wow, thank you.
It's, well, no, I have to thank you, really. So you are two books in, almost three books into this series. As you do your, and I know this was a really tough summer and spring and fall and winter for all the authors. How are you approaching readers? How are you going? Are you doing Zoom discussions? Are you going out there to try to promote? Or when you were promoting, were you getting, what was the feedback you were getting? I'm sure you were just, your dance card was full, I'm sure.
My dance card was full. And then it was not. You can hear from my voice, I'm still processing all this. You know, I'm a very lucky human in the work I get to do and the life I get to lead. And there are a lot of people with a lot more tragedy from this horrible pandemic than I've experienced. That is for sure. So it feels a little precious in a way to say, gosh, I had all these great conferences I was going to go to, and obviously they're all, you know, either canceled, the early ones were, or now they're online. So that's what I'm doing, is a lot of online events. And honestly, to me, it's not quite the same. I love seeing people in person and chatting with them and, you know, having those spontaneous moments with readers or fellow writers or just other human beings. And it's really hard to do that via Zoom. But I totally support and understand why all these conferences are happening the way they are. And that's the right thing to do. And I'm sort of in awe of the human spirit saying, you know what, we can't do this conference in person this year, but we're going to find this creative way to do it online and help people connect as much as we possibly can in this moment. So I kind of love that. I'm looking for the positive out of it. I do a lot of Zoom book clubs, and I find that that's really kind of neat because, of course, I wasn't going to hop in a car or on a plane to go to a book club in, say, Texas. You know, that's just would not make sense time-wise or otherwise. So with people getting more and more comfortable with Zoom or FaceTime or Skype, I'm able to visit book clubs that I normally wouldn't. So that's kind of a benefit. So I'm enjoying that.
Yeah. As a side note, the book discussions that I was doing at the Merrick Library, we would get about 40 to 50 patrons coming in person. And I would sort of have a PowerPoint for the book. And then we would either Zoom the author in, Skype the author in, or FaceTime the author in. So we would really hosted Lisa C. And it would just sort of be like a normal, if I couldn't get them, I could get them that way. I could get them over an online source, right? So we did a quick pivot because we'd already been living in this space, at least Merrick Library had, and I had. Okay. So that's why it's not a huge change for us. And then I discover The Widows again. And I, so yeah, it's so having said all of that about the Zoom book discussions and, you know, doing these book tours online, if readers want to follow you or find you on social media to find out what the latest and the greatest is for Jess Montgomery, where can they go?
Well, they can start with my website, which is jessmontgomeryauthor.com. And all the various links to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are there. I'm pretty active on Facebook on my Jess Montgomery author page. And I have a group called Jess Montgomery Book Friends. So on the Jess Montgomery author page, I do a little Facebook Live every Monday at 3. I call it Tea with Jess because one of the characters in my novels is Nana, and she always says, life is hard, have tea. And I thought, good grief, you know, life is hard, we should have tea. So that's what we do at 3 o'clock on Mondays.
Can I be your merchandiser? Because I feel like you've got a lot of merchandising we can do there. You've got Nana's line, and then you've got Team Lily. I think we've got something going here. We can get a tea towel that says that. I mean,
that would be fun. Yeah, that would be fun. Yes, you can be my merchandiser. So that's how I stay in touch with people. And yeah, the letters that you mentioned, if people go to my website and they sign up for my email newsletter, they automatically get those letters. So they too can enjoy the extra material. And the newsletter comes out, it's more than every other month. It's about 9 times a year. And, you know, I just sort of share what's going on with me as a writer and what's happening with the books. And so lots of ways in which people can stay in touch.
That's great.
And I'm happy to come to Zoom book clubs.
Yeah. So. Yay. The next book coming out is, and you mentioned the title before, could you just give us a little info on that?
Sure. It's called The Stills, and it's coming out in hardback, ebook, and audio with Susan Bennett, March 9th of 2021. And in the first two books, Prohibition's kind of in the background, and The Stills, not, maybe not surprising with a title like that, it's in the foreground, and it's set in 1927. And turns out 1927 is a fascinating year in Prohibition in U.S. history for, again, some shocking reasons. And so Lily is investigating some activity. I don't want to give too much away around Prohibition. And it's also called The Stills because she takes moments to be still. So in the Hollows, she's mourning, still mourning Daniel, and but figuring out how much she loves her job. And in The Stills, she's kind of finishing that reckoning with herself a bit so that she can move on to other cases.
Okay. So that is The Stills, and that is set for March. And readers and listeners can actually go to your JessMontgomeryAuthor.com website to mm-hmm. see where you'll be promoting that. And maybe when that comes out, everyone will have caught up from book one to book two. And then I don't have any trouble spoiling anything when we when we talk about book three. So we've got the first book, the first two books are out, and now we've got the third book. We can follow you on Facebook and on Twitter and mm-hmm. on your website. And I'm very excited about this Prohibition book for The Stills. I love that Lily's going to take some time for herself. I don't know what that's going to look like. So I'm really excited about that. So now that The Stills is ready to come out, do you take some time off?
Yeah, I've already got a general outline for book four. I have no idea of the title yet, but I know who my co-narrator is with Lily and thematically what we'll be exploring. So it'll be set in 1928. So I'm diving in, and I'm grateful to be able to just kind of fall into this other world. Yeah. And I have sort of sorted out what happens to the characters over the next like 10 years or so. So I know where they're generally headed, which helps to come up with the individual stories because I know where I'm pushing them towards.
So for readers and listeners, just a reminder, this is called the Kinship series. Book one is The Widows. I am telling you, it knocked me off my feet. Book two is The Hollows. And no, I did not run into an oak tree when I was listening to it, although there is still that potential.
Be safe.
Be safe. And then book three comes out in March, and that is called The Stills. And I am super excited to read that, and I cannot wait. Now, the question for me is, do I try to read it as a galley or just wait until March? I'll leave everybody on the edge of their seat waiting to see what it is that I do.
What you choose to do.
Jess Montgomery, I cannot thank you enough for joining me today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf. You are amazing. Your books are amazing. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I've loved chatting with you.
Thank you. Okay, listeners, I'll be sure to pop in all the links that Jess Montgomery just discussed with all of us to the episode 44 podcast page. Thank you, as always, listeners, for joining me. Thank you for following along. Thank you for staying in touch with Top Shelf at Merrick Library. And for the latest and the greatest at Merrick Library, check out our website at merricklibrary.org. Remember, you can follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find most podcasts. Very special thanks, as always, go to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmier, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.